Let's all talk about the best league in the world. And this weekend definitely showed us that it might be. So we're here to offer you insight that you wouldn't get anywhere else and answer all the questions that everyone has. For example, Man City are good. Liverpool are good. Who knew? But I wonder which manager you'd rather have a bear hug from. Maybe Jurgen Klopp when your side's got a 1-0 win against a mid-table opponent, or when you're a fullback on Pep Guardiola's team trying to take a throw in. Who do you think was more vicious? That's something we'll try and answer today. Also, we all worried about a very historic club, someone who seems like a staple of the Premier League, sinking fast, and questioning whether they even deserve their spot in the league. Turns out, no, they probably don't. Man United are rubbish. But Everton, on the other hand, will benefit from a 1-0 win. Elsewhere, Maurizio Pochettino might think that he's got the best front three in world football, but turns out his former club might be able to boast that at the moment, as Kulusevski, Son and Kane tear Aston Villa apart, while Arsenal realise that there ain't no party like a Thomas party, because without Thomas party, your midfield stops. Welcome to the Football Diary Podcast. Thank you for joining us, and I'm joined myself by Dave. Thank you for being with me, mate. Let's try and unpick a pretty mental weekend, right?
Yeah, chaotic, to say the least. Where do we start, I suppose?
Well, I think there's only one place to start, and that's with the top of the league, really, where anticipation had been building for a really long time over Man City taking on Liverpool at the Etihad, with Man City going into the game 1 point ahead of them. And they finished the game 1 point ahead of them. But actually, Dave, even though it was a draw, it was a fantastic game. Two sides really showed us what sort of quality they have. What did you make of the game? What were your first thoughts of it?
Oh, mesmerising. And, you know, as a United fan, you're envious seeing these two teams, especially these two teams, playing the way that they are. And the result itself, I mean, you could argue that Man City potentially were the better team in the game, especially in the first half. The first half, they were, you know, unbelievable in spells, created probably the better chances. And but I mean, you've got to give full credit to Liverpool, really. They responded so well in the second half. I think they sort of caught Man City by surprise a little bit in how quickly out the traps they did come out in that second half, and they responded, you know, really effectively. And they got the goal at kind of drew it level, but I think Man City will be quite, you know, disappointed with the result itself. I think they felt they had, you know, the better of it, and, you know, arguably the same again earlier on in the season. That's two all draws now, yeah, in the same season, and it's the results that have, you know, rested on in certain moments in the game. Man City not able to take their opportunities, and Liverpool have been clinical. I mean, you could argue that Liverpool's attack is their strength and probably better than Man City's. But there were certain moments in the game, I think, again, decisions that were strange.
Yeah, definitely.
The Fabinho challenge, I don't understand how that wasn't looked at, and a red card challenge, if ever one. It was, you know, clear cut in my eyes.
Yeah, there was a few moments actually where I thought the referee kind of didn't really know how to play the occasion. He very much allowed play to continue and tried to play advantage where possible, but also then kind of lacked the discipline to deal with it as a football game, which it was first and foremost. It was almost as if he was just desperate to keep it 11v11, because the other player that I thought was really lucky to stay on the pitch was Thiago Alcantara, who I think probably could have picked up four bookings in the game. But I think you're right. I think Man City will probably be the more disappointed of the two teams. Liverpool didn't look their best, but still managed to get the job done, which is a really great point for them. But I think Man City, particularly in the first half, they will feel like they could have done more. And towards the end of the game, obviously, they had a couple of chances to seal what would have been a really important win. But who do you think benefits the most then, Dave, from this result going into the run-in for the league title?
I'd say Man City have got probably the better run-in. Liverpool have got a couple of tricky fixtures. I'm not even going to put the Man United fixture in there because game fall. But I think out of the two teams, I think Liverpool would be the happier on the balance of play, and especially in that first half where Man City were dominant. They could have been, you know, three goals in front, and you know they weren't. And you know, full credit to Liverpool, they obviously took advantage of that. And I feel as though on the outcome of, you know, the basis of the play, that Liverpool will be the happier of the two teams. And
yeah,
especially I think on the basis of the two games overall, I think Man City were clearly, you know, the better team in both the games. And again, we know that performances don't always produce the results that sometimes they deserve. And
definitely,
I think the key players I think to look out for in this game, De Bruyne.
Yeah,
he's outstanding. Watch, he just puts everything on a plate, and
it just seemed like he was thinking two steps ahead of everyone else. And any moment that he was met with any sort of opposition, he still navigated his way through. I think about that Riyad Mahrez chance right at the end of the game where he tries to love Alisson, and De Bruyne is under a lot of pressure and still plays an inch perfect pass in the last minute of a game that he's done nothing but run his socks off for. And his quick thinking for the first Man City goal, it just shows that his footballing intelligence is exactly what Guardiola wants from a midfielder. De Bruyne was actually one of the players I was going to pick out for you, Dave, as well. But another one that I think is worth a mention for how well he played was actually Bernardo Silva, who seemed to operate in very tight spaces and just kind of dictate the midfield at times. What did you make of his personal performance in this game?
Yeah, I fully agree with you. I feel as though, especially in these big games, he seems to just rise to the occasion, and not just kind of obviously in, you know, attacking areas, but you know, like you mentioned there, you often saw him pick the ball up in, you know, midfield in defensive areas and press in these areas where Man City is so effective at overturning, you know, possession. And he was, you know, fully influential in everything that they did, and the tempo was really set by, you know, players like Bernardo and Phil Foden. I thought one of his better games that I've seen him play in, you know, I've not seen him kind of produce it too much in some of the bigger fixtures, but I felt as though
he had a good game against Liverpool last time as well, didn't he? That was probably his best performance of the season. So it's obviously an opponent that he enjoys playing. The other odd player for me, and one that, although he got a goal, I do wonder whether it was the right selection or not, Gabriel Jesus. I wonder how much he fits that Man City system, because there were maybe three or four occasions where he just looked a bit too selfish to be a Man City player. Man City are all about passing the ball between their attacking players and waiting until they get that killer opportunity to hit. Whereas Jesus just seemed to be shooting on sight, didn't he, Dave? Were you surprised to see his name in the starting 11 this weekend?
I was. It's clearly something that City have worked on in training, because, you know, he scored, that was his first goal in 16 Premier League appearances.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I was quite surprised by that stat actually. But yeah, I think going off of how they've set up, you know, in the last run of games, and we've kind of not really featured Jesus, that it was very surprising for me. And full credit to him, to be fair, he took his goal so well, you know, the way he kind of ran onto that and was able to keep it down on the half volley, because we've seen so many times people put over chances over the bar in those positions. And but yeah, there was moments, wasn't there? It was almost kind of, once he scored that goal, it was almost like he was too sort of focused on,
yeah,
you know, making a difference. Yeah. And that, yeah, the, like you say, there was moments there where they were just lacking the final pass in certain areas, or lacking that final right decision to make the difference. And it happened too many times. And it was often, you know, him and Sterling, Mahrez to a certain degree, when he came on, just made a couple of wrong decisions that
he did, didn't he?
And you know, it was a strange one, because it's De Bruyne who was creating these opportunities, and you kind of just sort of wanted him another opportunity to fall to him, I think, if you were a City fan, because he was having such a brilliant game that I feel as though he, you know, would have been the man to kind of make the difference again.
Definitely.
I thought one moment that wasn't really spoken about actually in that game was the goal that Phil Foden scored just before half time, brilliant strike. The foul just before it, I thought
he hit it so
hard on the ball. I thought they won the ball.
What that was, the ref blew too soon. If that was one that the ref hadn't blown his whistle, there's no way VAR is calling that as a foul, and that would have been a goal that stood. But because the ref blows, they have to stop play. I thought the ref reacted way too quickly there because I wasn't convinced it was a foul either. I think it was against Bernardo Silva, wasn't it? And Foden finished the ball so beautifully. And then obviously Sterling has one disallowed in the second half as well for a very narrow offside. But I think one of the more telling things about this performance and the way that these two teams lined up, and all credit to Liverpool, I'm not for a second suggesting that they played badly in this game. I thought it was a really intense game and they dealt with it very well as a unit. But if you focused on, we've just talked about Man City's key performers in this game, and they were probably De Bruyne, Bernardo Silva, Mahrez and Sterling to an extent. And we talked about Jesus's impact. If you were then to look at Liverpool's players, the person I'd probably pick out the most for a good performance was probably Virgil van Dijk. Other than that, Dave, what went right for Liverpool? Because Salah didn't look particularly threatening. Obviously, he got the assist and it was a very good pass, but we saw very little of him. Mane took his goal very well, but again, we didn't see much else really, did we? What worked for Liverpool and why were they able to keep up with this City side that we're kind of lavishing with praise? But I don't know what to say about Liverpool and why it worked.
I think there was a couple of lapses on Man City's behalf, really, that kind of stood out to me, and particularly Liverpool's first goal. They just had too much time in the box there. Though, you know, Man City were a bit all over the place, looked a bit disjointed in that particular moment. They had way too much time to kind of to place that shot, in which they did in the first goal. And then the second goal, it was again another lapse. It just seemed to be almost straight from kickoff, you know, within the first minute and a half. And it was a brilliant pass from Salah, to be fair, into Mane. But again, it almost just seemed too open. I mean, you have seen City be, you know, City have been guilty of this, you know, over the last couple of years, and kind of how high they do play sometimes, it does leave, you know, their defence a little bit exposed. And I feel as though this is where, though, that I feel Kyle Walker is, you know, so effective for them.
Yeah.
Back where he snuffs out so many 1v1s, and you know,
amazing.
He just kind of closes space down in so quickly, and you know, they can regroup in their numbers. And I think he's going to be a big miss for City when he starts to
definitely. Do you know what? There was a moment in the first half where Salah, I think it was against Laporte or maybe Stones, kicked the ball around him and thought, I'm Salah, I'm fast enough to get to this on the other side. And out of nowhere, Kyle Walker comes from the opposite flank and covers. You are right. And actually, when you mention how high City's line was, that was something I really noticed about Liverpool. In the first half, they were playing such a high defensive line and they were pressing so aggressively on City's defence. And City just managed to pass their way through it. And that's why De Bruyne and Bernardo Silva had so much success. And then in the second half, Liverpool dropped that defensive line right back and managed to contain City a lot more. I thought that was really noticeable. But we obviously see these two sides meet again in the FA Cup. They've got 7 games left, both of them now, to try and stake a claim for the league. Both of them are going for multiple trophies right now. The question on most people's lips are these the two best sides in club football right now? Do you think this is the peak of European football, seeing these two sides? And did this game kind of sway that in any way for you?
I think Man City are the best team in Europe. And I think I was quite surprised in how dominant they were, particularly in that first half. And I think a lot of that was down to Fabinho for Liverpool had a really poor game.
He did.
It was almost like Thiago was kind of holding that midfield on his own at times. I was quite surprised by that, to be fair. But again, there's probably going to be, I'd say Liverpool are going to be in the market probably for another midfielder, because obviously Jordan Henderson, you know, looks to be sort of coming to the end of his career. Whether he wants to start to play more football, might be on the way out potentially. Obviously, Thiago's not got age on his side. Fabinho, again, I feel like they probably just need another midfielder in there, or midfielder or two. So, yeah, again, it's picking a name out of a hat, really, isn't it? It's a moment can change things. We've seen that.
I'm going to make you do that, mate. I'm going to make you pick a name. In one word, who's winning the title now?
I'm still going to go with Man City just because they get the job done. Having said that, you know, Liverpool over the last two or three games haven't been brilliant, but they've got over the line as well. But I just feel as though the way Man City play, how they dominate games, they, you know, strangle opposition, and it's absolutely terrifying to play against. And
well, that was a few more words than one, but at least we got a definitive answer from you. So I'm going to make you feel great now. We've talked about probably the two best sides in Europe right now, in Liverpool and Man City. And I'm going to move on to your beloved Manchester United, who I know we're probably running out of new things to say about them. So maybe we'll try and focus a little bit on Everton and what it means for them. But this weekend, I'm going to say it's the worst I've seen Man United play. I genuinely believe. I thought they were absolutely awful. And they fell behind 1-0 to an Everton side who, again, have been woeful lately. I watched Everton-Burnley as well. And we'll come on to Burnley and how they're kind of bottling it themselves this weekend later on. But Everton were a side that couldn't defend. Ben Godfrey looked like a defender who had no clue what he was doing. Everton looked like they had no real midfield or thought. And then they played Man United at the weekend, and Fabian Delph rolled back the years and looked brilliant at controlling a midfield. Ben Godfrey dealt with absolutely everything he needed to in defence, and United just had nothing. They couldn't come up with a single thing. What? I don't even know what to ask you really, Dave, on this one, because we know the answers to most of it, but what happened, I guess?
Well, you know, I don't think, before Everton scored, I don't think we were particularly great. But, I mean, we did actually conjure up, you know, two or three chances where we could have scored before they did. And, you know, we didn't take any of these opportunities. Rashford initially looked quite sharp for about 20 minutes and then just went disappearing for the rest of the game. But, yeah, again, I watched on and, you know, it got up to half-time and it looked like after Everton scored, we actually got worse as the game went on. Second half began, and I thought, you know, maybe we'll get a response. But again, we dominated much of the possession of the game. I think we had about 65% possession, but we just looked lacking in ideas. The creativity wasn't there. I think it took until about the 91st minute where Ronaldo actually had a half chance.
Yeah,
which he nearly scored from, but it, you know, it must be so frustrating for him to kind of.
Well, he showed that, didn't he? Ugly scenes really from Ronaldo. He kicked the ball into the dugout and got booked for that. And then obviously we've had this incident after the game where he's smacked this kid's phone out of his hand in frustration. It just, to me, Dave, it seems like it's gone beyond the performances on the pitch now, and it's in the players' heads. None of them look like they really want to be there. It looks so unsettled. None of them look like they've got any confidence at all. I mean, Harry Maguire is a magnet for things to go wrong at the moment. Obviously, his deflection completely wrong-foots De Gea, who seems to be the only player who's putting in performances at the moment. You're right, Rashford, I suppose you could say he looked sharp. He just looked like another person who wasn't going to score a goal to me. I watched Jadon Sancho, a player who is completely renowned for his ability to beat a man, to find an incisive pass. And I watched him for years at Dortmund, having that confidence to run at a defender. And every time he got the ball for United at the weekend, he stopped the play, turned around, passed it backwards. And I couldn't believe what I was watching. It just seems like a team that just, they don't want to be there. They don't want to be on the pitch. They're ready for this season to be over. Now, I wonder what that's due to. I think a lot of them will be missing Solskjaer because clearly he got on with the play as well. A lot of them will be frustrated at the lack of progress the team have made. A lot of them will be against Ralf Rangnick. And I do think behind the scenes there have been enough things going on that might be kind of upsetting the club. I think it kind of Listen, they are the last people that really are suffering from this incident. But with everything that happened with Greenwood earlier in the season as well, I can't believe that that hasn't disrupted the dressing room in some way as well. This constant change, this constant lack of progression and a plan, those players, do they want to be there, Dave, at the moment?
There's a lack of accountability, isn't there? You know, you can see it in games. It's almost like you mentioned there, passing the ball around, almost waiting for someone else to do something when they need to be playing as a unit. And you mentioned Jadon Sancho there, that there's nobody in that team on his level in terms of, you know, football IQ, operating in these tight spaces, you know, where to when to release the ball, when to receive it, you know, the right areas to operate in. I'd probably say Bruno and Ronaldo, they're only probably a couple of players who got sort of an idea what to do with the ball. And, you know, it's just so frustrating. And I think that's kind of, you know, it must have affected him as a player. That atmosphere must be so toxic at the moment, because, you know, there's constantly things coming out all the time, whether players want to be there next season, whether they're going to re-sign a new deal. Pogba, I don't really know why he's playing games anymore, because he's definitely not going to be here come next year. So why not give an opportunity to a couple of the young players? Because at the moment, could we really do any worse than bring in a couple of under-23s? And just inject some hunger. That's what I feel we need. There's no hunger there.
Well, obviously, there's been massive talk this week that the deal is almost done for Ten Hag, although I've also read that RB Leipzig are putting in a proposal to him as well. If you're Ten Hag, what do you think of United right now? Do you see this as an opportunity for you to take on a big club and do something special? Or would you be a bit apprehensive as to what you'd actually be taking over?
Oh, yeah, there's going to be apprehension there for sure. But from what I've seen and heard is that he's looking to bring a sleeping giant back from the abyss, so to speak. And I don't think he realizes how big a deal is, a bigger job he's got on his hands.
No, probably not.
I can't imagine, unless our board somehow manages to mess it up.
It looks dumb, doesn't it?
How he's going to take the RB Leipzig job, or I've heard Dortmund are interested as well.
Interesting.
So, I can't think of either of those two of United. I'm not going to be, I'm not being arrogant in saying that, but I just feel as though the challenge is too good a challenge to turn down.
Yeah, and we've seen that with managers in the past where really it's probably not the right job for them in the moment. But you just look, I mean, you look at someone like Lampard in the other dugout, he couldn't have not taken the Chelsea job when it was offered to him. So I wonder whether that will play into it. But I actually think Ten Hag would be better off going to Dortmund, because that doesn't then eliminate the step to Man United in a few years' time. That job will be available again when United get this appointment wrong. And he might have had some time to embed himself at a club that does have a philosophy that's at least remotely close to Ajax's in terms of the way that they want to progress. I don't know. I think it's important, though, that we also look at the other side of this game. And obviously Everton were having a terrible week. They lost 3-2 to Burnley midweek and looked awful. And all of a sudden looked like they were in serious danger. They were going to this game against Man United whilst Burnley were taking on bottom of the league Norwich, and all looked like they were going to be in the bottom three by the end of this weekend. Instead, Norwich pull off a 2-0 win somehow, and Everton pick up 3 points against Man United. Where does this leave them now, Dave? Is this almost one foot into the next season's Premier League, or do you think there's still a lot of danger surrounding Everton?
I still think they'll stay up. I think there's three worse teams down there than Everton. That's not discounting how terrible they've been before the United game. In fact, I don't even think they were that good in the United game. They were just they were just better than a very, you know, a very terrible team. outran them. You know, they ran 10 kilometers more than United, which across the game is a, you know, vast amount.
Yeah.
And they just wanted it more. Like you say, there wasn't really that many chances for Everton. I think that was their first shot on goal that they scored with in that first half.
Yeah.
And they didn't really create really anything of note in the second half. And pretty much just defended quite comfortably.
Yeah.
And saw it out. But, you know, full credit to them. It's something for them to build on. So.
Yeah. I watched this game as it was on, and it was incredibly boring to watch, to be honest. There was no real creativity, no football really intent from either side, really. And I think it speaks volumes that I watched the highlights of this game just to remind myself of some of the key events. In the second half, the biggest highlight was Anthony Gordon trying to claim a penalty by running in front of Alex Tellers. Like, nothing really was made of this game. It was two very poor footballing sides, but one of them got a massive stroke of luck in that deflection, and that was enough to save them. Everton still have a pretty tough run in, but their home form might be able to get them through. Of course, Burnley, after picking up three massive points midweek, then go on to lose to Norwich, which looks like it might seal their fate in terms of being a Championship club next season. Did you watch any of the Burnley Norwich game, Dave, or what do you think of Burnley's hopes of survival now?
I was surprised at that result, to be fair, because I thought that Burnley, with the victory that they had over Everton, that must have, you know, galvanised them. You'd have thought, really, of giving them much momentum, and it did completely the opposite. And Norwich were the better team, really.
Yeah, definitely they were.
And, I mean, does that give Norwich a lifeline now? Whether they look at that game where they watched that game, Everton United, and thought, well, we've got Man United at the weekend. Chance against them, you know, with how they've performed against Everton. So who knows? If they go and beat Man United,
it's open, I suppose. I do think Norwich are already down. I think Norwich and Watford are down. I think we can confirm that. And Sean Dyche will be, I was going to say tearing his hair out, but he hasn't got any. Tearing his goatee out at the fact that they picked up those points against Everton and then just completely threw it away at the weekend. It's really frustrating for them. But at least there's still a relegation battle. There's something to watch. United probably out of the race for the top four now. And it looks like that place might have been claimed this weekend. Now, let's go back a week to our last podcast where we were talking about Arsenal's certain win against Crystal Palace and how they were not only going to finish fourth, but they might even catch Chelsea in third. Well, Chelsea then responded with a 6-0 win against Southampton, and I think Southampton fans will have been making sure they weren't turning that score sheet upside down and seeing another 9-0. And then Arsenal have managed to bottle it, sadly. They've lost two games in a row to both Crystal Palace and Brighton. But let's start with the team that look like they've now cemented fourth. And my club side, Dave, let me down just as much as yours did this weekend, really. Tottenham 4, Aston Villa 0. It was a frustrating one for me to watch, Dave. What did you make of the game? And particularly that Spurs front three who just look absolutely terrifying right now.
Oh, yeah. That's the highlight, you know, that Tottenham front three. They were mesmerising at times. I'd like to highlight, I think, Kulusevski. I think I wish we could talk about Son and how brilliant his hat-trick was. The finishes were unbelievable out of this world, and he made it look so easy. But what Kulusevski brings to that front three, and his desire, his work rate, he fits this league so well.
He does.
And you know, he scores goals as well. I don't think we saw the best of him, obviously, in Italy when he was there. And they've got so many. It sounds ridiculous because obviously how Juventus have petered off, but he did have quite a lot of competition there, and I feel as though he's come into Tottenham and Conte's obviously. He's obviously done something right because his response to coming into the team and performing like he has done consistently. And I think the thing that strikes me with Kulusevski, he very, very often tends to turn up with solid, at least a 7 out of 10, and I've not seen him really have a poor game. He's always seems to have an effect on the game. And I just feel as though Tottenham as a team now, obviously they've got this momentum going into the run-in, and we have seen them slip up a couple of occasions. Yeah, they've had these games here and there, and we've not seen a result come in, but it almost seems as though their front three are just clicking all at the right time. And I mean,
not just the front three. If you look, Conte has brought in two players in Bentancur and Kulusevski, who have both slotted in incredibly well. Their midfield looks so much better with Bentancur in there. And defensively, they look a lot sharper. Not necessarily in this game, to be honest. The first half was probably the best 45 minutes I've seen Aston Villa play under Steven Gerrard. But Hugo Lloris was just unbeatable, it seemed. He had a fantastic game in this one. But Antonio Conte has clearly got this Spurs team looking like his team now, which will give Spurs a lot of encouragement going into not only the rest of this season, but the summer and next season, and what he can turn this team into. Now, one thing I want to qualify, as wonderful as that front three were for Spurs, I do think Aston Villa's defence was awful in this game. And I'm loath to talk about individuals who I absolutely love being at the club. I speak about Villa quite a lot, and how much that for the first time in, I don't know, maybe 15 years, there's a squad of players that the fans love. There's a real happy atmosphere around the club. And these players have taken Aston Villa from the Championship, from a Premier League survival scare, to being a good mid-table side at the moment that have ambition of doing more. They're continuing to develop. And I love pretty much everyone in the squad. There's very likable characters in there. But this game, to me, highlighted we need a refresh in a lot of key areas, because if we do want to compete for a European place, we're a mile off it. As much as I think he had an incredible season last year, Ezri Konsa this year looks like a different defender. And it's really frustrating, because Villa's defence was one of the best in the Premier League last year. I mean, Martinez broke the equaled Villa's record for the most clean sheets in a Premier League season last year. And then this season, they just look abject. Konsa, I think you could fault with maybe three of the goals. The first one's a very poor defensive header away. He, for some reason, maybe it's because we're lacking a good holding midfielder, he's on the halfway line pressing Kane when he puts that header in for Son. And I think he just opens up a massive space for Son to run into. Cash is never going to be able to track that run. And then for Son's other goal, he manages to just give him acres of space inside the box. He doesn't close him down. Do you think, Dave, that this was a sign that big investment is needed at Villa to even be in the conversation for a European place next season?
Well, that's what you get for getting rid of Axel Tuanzebe.
He's playing really well at Napoli by playing about 7 minutes, I think, since he's been there.
No, yeah, I think you might be right then. Again, you've got to remember that in this last window, in the last 12 months, Aston Villa have brought so many players into that squad that they still must be gelling as a team. You think they've still got to be learning how to play together as a team. And I'm still kind of coming to terms with dealing with a transformation that team's made over the last year with the new players that they have in there. Some still, the likes of Liam Bailey, obviously we've not really seen much of him in the team as much as you, I'm sure you would have liked to. Danny Ings, I still don't know what to make of him. You know, I was a lot more.
You're right, to an extent. I think that's been said a lot of Villa this season and last season and maybe the season before. It's going to take time for these players to gel. But that's not an excuse for the individual errors that Villa have had far too often this season. Knowing your teammates doesn't excuse Ezri Konsa in this game, for example, because he's played with that back four with the exception of Luka Dean for 2 years now. Danny Ings, doesn't matter what team he is in, you expect him to take the chances when they fall to his feet. If his movement wrong and he wasn't picking up the ball, that's fine. But we had 14 shots at goal in the first half of this game and 7 on target and didn't score. Spurs had four key chances in this game and scored them all because they've got clinical finishers at the top end of the pitch. But in this, it just looked like Ings doesn't look like he's settled. I think you're right. He doesn't look the same player as he was last season, because really, outside of the big clubs, if you wanted a chance to fall to anyone in the Premier League last year, it was Danny Ings at Southampton. But it just doesn't seem like it's working for him at Villa, potentially, which has happened to Villa with strikers on numerous occasions. I don't know, Dave. I think Spurs were excellent in this game and really showed that there is a massive, massive gap between that sort of top six or seven and then the rest of the league in this game.
I think it's I thought, especially in that first half, how good Jacob Ramsey was in that first half. I thought it was
Jacob Ramsey's excellent. I love Jacob Ramsey, but again, I think he's going to take more and more time to adjust to the league and get used to making the right decisions, maybe, because there are a couple of occasions where he did so well in midfield, and then when it got to the final third, probably could have picked out a pass and shot, or picked a pass when he should have shot. It was a balance. But we'll see. I think Spurs massively now favourites for fourth after Arsenal have had a terrible week, I think it's safe to say. And really disappointing for Mikel Arteta with all the work that they've put in this season to see them lose to a very good Crystal Palace side on Monday, who then went on to lose to Leicester this weekend, and then lose to a Brighton side who have been in terrible form of late. Arsenal, I think, really showing that this is a young side that are lacking experience and maybe the pressure's getting to them. What do you think, Dave?
Well, we've seen this so many times, it seems. Arsenal slipping up to Brighton, and it always seems to be like it's Danny Welbeck who's the hero coming back to haunt them. But, yeah, I mean, I spoke to one of my friends this week and I thought, oh, you know, Arsenal have got, I think, an easy game. This weekend, they're saying, oh, Brighton always go off game. So I just thought it was, you know, it must have been so disappointing for Mikel Arteta to have kind of unwound the way it has done, really, because they've built up such a good run of form over the last, you know, couple of months. And we've really thought that, oh, this is a team that's coming together now. And it's a team in his mould that he's put together. And it's, I don't know if I can say if it's the Arsenal of old, or it's all going to depend on the next couple of games. Obviously, they've got Tottenham coming up in the next couple of weeks as well. So I feel like this next game that they play is huge. It's in how they approach it and how they respond. He's definitely going to be looking for a big reaction. And again, I actually am surprised. I'm not surprised that Arsenal have, you know, performed the way they have or lost the game. But I'm surprised just based on how well they've done over the last few weeks.
You are right. I'm not sure I'm surprised for a couple of reasons. They're obviously missing some very key players. Obviously, Kieran Tierney now looks like he's out for the season, potentially Thomas Partey as well. And Arteta seemingly doesn't seem to trust Tavares, so instead elected to play Xhaka at left back, which was a bizarre decision because this game was won for Brighton in midfield and Mbeumo was brilliant and so was Bissouma, and that kind of completely changed the game and Arsenal just look like they're lacking squad depth. And I said this in January, that window was so crucial for them if they wanted to get fourth. They failed to bring players in, and instead they let Maitland-Niles, Kolasinac, Murray, Chambers and Aubameyang go. Now, none of those players are excellent players that are going to start every game other than maybe Aubameyang. But it was depth. They could have done with Maitland-Niles at this point, or they could have done with just something different. But the squad just looks light, and those injuries look like they've really hit Arsenal, don't they?
I quite like Maitland-Niles, to be fair. I don't think he's any worse than what they've got
in there.
Great
at room.
No, but I mean, yeah, you mentioned there Xhaka is a strange one. And considering Tavares was actually being picked over some of their fullback options that they've got in there now at the start of the season, seem to be the favoured fullback option, is, you know, it's quite unusual. It seems as though he's fallen drastically down the pecking order. So, yeah, obviously there's some glaring misses in there in terms of, you know, the likes of, we see how important Partey is to them now. But again, like you mentioned there, putting your one of your only fit centre midfielders in Xhaka, taking him straight out of midfield and at fullback didn't seem like a great decision. Hindsight, and so, something you really would question looking at the team sheet as well. But I think that the approach, I think Arsenal now have just got to kind of obviously turn the page and, you know, move on to the next game and can't try and refocus, I suppose. And like you mentioned there, Tottenham are probably the favourites now, the top four. But how many times have we said that over the last few weeks? We thought, oh, yeah, Arsenal are in now for, you know, fourth spot. We're saying the same now against Spurs, about Spurs. So that encounter between the North London derby is going to be a huge one, even bigger now.
Yeah, and just a quick shout out for Brighton, who have been in terrible form. And Mbeumo's goal was fantastic. I thought he took it so well. He almost disguised it as well. It looked like he was about to leather it top corner, and then he just sort of passed it past Ramsdale. That was lovely. And also, Basuma looked brilliant in this game, and Casado as well. Their midfield was excellent. So at least Brighton looked like they were getting some form back. Elsewhere, we mentioned it briefly, but just a quick mention for a big, big result elsewhere. After losing to Brentford and then losing to Real Madrid, Chelsea went on to beat Southampton 6-0. Look, it's progress, Southampton fans. You haven't lost 9-0 this season, just the 6. A very interesting game, Dave. A particularly interesting character in Timo Werner, who managed to score twice. Fantastic for him. He also hit both posts and the crossbar in the first half. He's just comical, isn't he? But a great win for Chelsea going into a really important week for them, with probably the game of their season now back at the Bernabeu. What do you think, Dave? Chelsea show you enough this weekend to think that they might be able to salvage something in the Champions League?
What we have seen from Chelsea, I think, even in the moments where they've had difficult games and not the results that they were seeking, we've seen that they can respond, and Tuchel has been able to get a response out of them. So it wouldn't surprise me at all midweek if they came and, you know, made a real good go of it and make it a good tie. So I think one thing for me is actually seeing Mason Mount play the way he did, because he's not had the best of seasons, to be honest. You looked at him at the end of last season and you thought, you know, especially in the final against Man City, I thought he was brilliant, and you thought he would kick on as this season. There's been, of late especially, I'd say he's not been, you know, in the best form, and we saw him in his best, especially that for the goals that he scored, that strike from the edge of the air was unbelievable, the technique of it. He caught it so sweetly. And especially as an England fan as well, you want to be seeing England players doing well. And it'd be interesting to see how Chelsea approach this next game midweek, and one that's obviously huge for them. If they can beat Real Madrid, then, you know, that, I'm sure that will give them a huge lift in confidence. Although I'm sure the Tuchel being the manager that he is, I can't see how they won't be motivated and kind of have the right mindset approaching this game.
Definitely. One final mention then for the bottom of the table, where Leeds pretty much got themselves out of any lingering doubt with a 3-0 win over Watford. Looks like they're pretty much down. And Newcastle got a 1-0 win over Wolves on Friday. So they're pretty much safe now as well. So bottom of the table now is Norwich in bottom, 21 points. Then Watford, 22 points. Burnley, 24. Everton, 28. Leeds, 33. Newcastle, 34. So it's probably 4 from Norwich, Watford, Burnley and Everton. We think probably the current bottom three look a bit stuck now, but you never know with Everton. And what a week it was in the Premier League. We've not even had time to talk about Drewsbury Hall all of a sudden being like messy for Leicester as they seem to finally find some form again. Brentford won again, and West Ham, obviously, have got one eye on the Europa League because they didn't really show up. But it's been a great week, hasn't it, Dave?
Yeah, it's been, like I say, there's been so many, it's been such a mixed bag of results. And all of a sudden, we're getting teams that all looked quite well set and looked like they were, you know, going to finish the season strong, and it's completely turned around, and teams that weren't in good form are now having on the couple of, like you mentioned there, Leicester, obviously, Norwich, just pull a random win out of the bag, and all of a sudden they're
Brentford. Could have
a lifeline, although it's probably unlikely. Brentford, like you mentioned, they're
fourth. They're Brentford. It's brilliant, isn't it? Where have they come from?
Leeds, obviously, they look to be out of it now with a victory against Watford. Watford were terrible in that game. Some of the defending was but yeah, great week. It was probably one of the best weeks in a while, to be fair.
And it doesn't stop there, because now we have the Champions League back this weekend as well, and some massive games coming in both the Premier League and the FA Cup too. So I don't know, Dave. I think I'm going to be all footballed out by the end of this week. What about you?
Well, yeah, definitely.
It's always a pleasure to talk to you. And thank you, everyone, for joining us on the Football Diary this week. Hopefully, we'll have Mike back with us next week. As he always says, we're fairly new at the moment and we're really enjoying what we're doing. But your support is always crucial. So over there in some sort of corner, you can see our socials. Please join us. You can like and subscribe to us on YouTube. We're on Spotify or pretty much anywhere you find podcasts these days, which is great for us. Thank you for your continued support. Thank you, Dave, for being with me. And we'll see you
again. You're welcome.
Enjoy. We'll see you again next week on the Football Diary, hopefully.